I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Do you have teenagers at home, or maybe young people who've made the leap to college or independent living? Do you know what they know about juuling? Do you even know what juuling is? For the record, Juul is a brand of e-cigarettes that has been gaining in popularity. If parents don't know what their young people know and are thinking about various drugs and substances like this, it's even harder for researchers and policymakers to know what young people are doing and thinking, and to be able to be nimble about shaping legislation, educational campaigns, and other policy initiatives. And then knowing whether those efforts are successful in prevention and harm reduction, or if they need to be tweaked. Last February, two researchers who think a lot about substance use and young people were both stranded at Burlington Airport, and they started talking about this dilemma, how to know the effect of policy changes fast enough to make good use of them. And so they came up with what they hope will be a helpful solution. The PACE Vermont study just launched last week. It's a partnership between UVM College of Medicine, the Vermont Center on Behavior and Health, UVM Cancer Center, and the Vermont Department of Health. And it asks young people between the ages of 12 and 17, and then young adults ages 18 to 25, to take three online surveys over 6 months. The surveys ask about tobacco, alcohol, and other drugs, and also delve into how young people feel about substance use and policies. Now, they're still in the recruitment phase, and today we're going to talk with those serendipitous creators, Andrea Vellante, professor of psychiatry and psychology at UVM, and Christy Valancourt, chronic disease information director at the Vermont Department of Health. Thank you both for being in the studio today.
Thank you for having us.
I have to say, you have way more productive flight delays than I do. Is that really how you started having this conversation?
Yes. I can't believe it myself because usually I have my headphones in, but we had an ill-fated flight and overhead announcements that we couldn't understand. So I turned to Andrea and then we just started to talk to each other and we found out we had so many things in common. I mean, it's pretty much the perfect Vermont story, right?
Oh, you didn't even know each other?
No, we didn't know each other at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then it was, you look familiar, and oh, where do your kids go to school? Oh, we actually have that in common as well. And then,
hey, let's create thousands of people involved in a survey that will assess youth behavior and attitudes towards drugs. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
that
no
happens all the time.
Yeah, all the time. By the time we were done, we had a plan to stay in touch, so.
Okay, so all of this has, sort of snowballed into what has now been launched, the PACE Vermont study. And it is asking people to young people to join, to enroll, to do these surveys. And you're looking for something like 3,000 participants, right?
That's right. So we're looking at trying to get over the next 8 weeks or so about 3,000 participants into the survey, 2,000 youth ages 12 to 17 and 1,000 young adults 18 to 25.
And Professor Vellante, why is it that you're looking for 2,000 younger people and only 1,000 in that older sort of young adult stage?
Well, part of this study is a pilot to figure out how and whether we can recruit people in this way. And the way that we recruit youth is a little bit different because we have to get parental consent. We know from past research that we can get young adults to participate in these types of online surveys, but we really wanted to focus our efforts on seeing how we could get youth in.
And how are you trying to market this to adults, to the parents who are saying, not only do I have to worry about my kids, I also have to get them to all their activities. I have to figure out what they're going to eat for dinner. And now you want me to let them participate in an online survey that's asking them how they feel about tobacco and what are you going to do with this information and how is this going to affect my child? So, Christy Valancourt, how are you talking to parents about what this is going to be?
Yeah, we try not to look at it as something outside of what they're already interested in. I mean, I'm a parent myself. We all have these questions, and we want our kids to make good choices and to be safe. So I think that, you know, the way we're speaking to parents is that this helps us all. This helps parents kind of better understand their kids. They're not seeing their child's data, but they'll be a part of a community. You know, we're encouraging people to go on Facebook and be part of the discussions, and they'll see some preliminary data as it goes. So they feel something, they're a part of something bigger than just this small study. And then for youth, I think that youth, they have a lot to say. They have a lot to contribute. We're giving them a platform to do that in a safe space. And at the same time, it helps us to make better and more informed decisions on, like you said, policies and other work we have at the health department.
So, Professor Valenti, tell me a little bit more about what the survey is, and then we can get into what you're going to do with all this information. But what will people see?
So people will enter a screening survey to see, you know, whether they're eligible. We're looking for Vermont residents within a certain age range. And once they get past the screening survey, if they're eligible, they get a baseline survey right away. And that baseline survey takes about 10 to 15 minutes. We're asking a number of things. So as you mentioned, we're asking about actual use behavior, whether people have used or experimented with different products like tobacco, alcohol, electronic vapor products, marijuana. We're also asking a lot about harm perceptions. So how do people think about these products? We're asking about what young people know about the policies in our state, and how people have been exposed to campaigns that are running in our state. So we're excited to have all of those things in one place. Typically, these types of data are collected by surveillance tools every couple of years at the population level. And then we get sort of a deep dive on specific campaigns in much smaller samples. So we're trying to bridge the gap between every 2 years of data collection at the state level with sort of on-the-fly data collection for evaluation efforts. So we have like a larger sample to get a sense of what's going on in our state.
And that's the first survey. And then there are two more within this six-month period. Are they similar? So you're just seeing what changes over that six-month time period?
So there are things that the thing that's really unique about this project is that we will be able to be nimble. So one of the problems that we've had in the past is that Juul came on the market and Juul became a huge product, and none of our surveillance tools captured it because the wording in our questions didn't ask about Juul, and young people did not think Juul was an e-cigarette. So in those big surveys, young people who were using Juul weren't saying yes, that they had used an e-cigarette. So the beauty of this project is that from wave to wave, we can add in items as we hear about things that are going on in young people. So there will have a lot of questions that are asked at each wave. And what will happen is a young person who completes our baseline survey will then, in a couple of months, get an email or a text message with a link to the next survey, and the same for the 6 month. There will be some items that will be the same, and there will be new items that will be added, and some will be removed. So we have some flexibility in the survey platform.
And Christy Valancourt, Andrea Valenti was talking about some of the ways that some of this information is already captured. And I think, of course, about the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which goes really deep into a lot of the same areas that you're talking about in this survey. And so what you weren't getting from that was this ability to be nimble and to see things shift over time quickly. I mean, we're already getting the deep dive, so why do we need this new survey?
It's a great question, because the YRBS is invaluable, the data we get from that. We need that. But like Andrea said, a lot happens in the 2 years in between these big surveys. So by no means is PACE Vermont intending to take the place of these statewide surveys, these national surveys. It's simply to complement. Flexibility and the ability to be nimble is not something typically associated with research like this when it comes to these much bigger studies. So that was just so enticing and exciting for us. We're going to know what's happening in real time. What's happening right now? Is there a new product that we're just hearing about it? I mean, often by the time we hear about it, it's not cool anymore, right? So we can get a little deeper to the what and to the why, and then we can compare it to these big statewide surveys.
How are you finding out what the next question should be? If researchers typically don't know until it's already, you know, either pervasive or already over, how do you have your ear to the ground enough to know even what right questions to ask?
So that's been a real partnership, as with this whole project, all of us at the table together, representatives across the Department of Health in different departments, and we come up together with the survey items. We get feedback from others in our group. We put information out to community partners, and we're trying to get a sense, you know, in real time, what are the things we want to be asking about? Are there new things that we should be asking about? We'll be doing that more as we move forward, now that we have our baseline data in progress.
Listeners, what do you want to see and know about? Maybe you work with young people and you're seeing something new coming on the market or coming out and being around in the communities that you work with and the kids that you talk to. So what do you think should be on those questions? Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We're talking about the PACE Vermont study, but also thinking a little more broadly as well about substance use and young people and how to assess not only what young people are doing and thinking, but what they're exposed to and how that has an effect on the choices that they make. So if they're seeing anti-smoking campaigns, does that then affect their choices that they, you know, think about when they're 15, 16 and maybe thinking about maybe I'll smoke a cigarette or maybe not, or maybe I'll Juul, but do I know what Juuling is? Do I know that that has nicotine in it? Again, if you have a question or you want to share your own experiences, 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Now, if you have these two surveys, so you have the older young adults, the 18 to 25, and then you have the other sort of recruitment pool is 12 to 17, are you going to break the results down by ages? Are they all sort of pooled together? How do you then sort of collate and figure out how to make this presentable?
We will do both. We will take a look across the full age range. We'll look at our 12 to 17 year olds compared to our 18 to 25 year olds. Part of the goal here was to have samples that we could compare. Some of our national data, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, we have chosen these age groups because they specifically map to the age groups that are used by the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. So we're trying to have benchmarks that we can compare our data to. We're looking at the distribution of our responses across the state. So we can look at some data depending on the sample sizes by county. We can feed some of that information back, and we've already gotten requests to do so to counties specifically. So we're really excited about the flexibility that we have, you know, not only in the data collection, but in the dissemination.
How do you protect people's privacy then? Once you get down to the county level and you're breaking things down by age, I mean, certainly that's not an individual kid, but, you know, you could start to see some concerns about like, yeah. Oh, are you knowing like the 12, you know, 12-year-olds in my school and what they're doing?
So those are things that we will be discussing with the analysts at the Department of Health to be consistent with the way that they present data when we get down to those smaller cell sizes. And we'll be very careful about aggregating to the extent possible or suppressing data if need be to make sure that we maintain those privacy concerns.
Christy Valancourt, one of the things that I find interesting, you know, you're doing a lot of experimentation in this, and there's a lot of, you know, that word nimble keeps coming up, that you're trying to be nimble and change the questions depending on what's happening. But even in the incentives that you're giving participants, you're still running an experiment because there is an incentive for participants, whether they're entered into, is it a gift card lottery, like a $50 lottery, or they can get a $10 gift card,
mm-hmm.
or they can choose to be whether they want to be in the lottery or given the gift card. So you have three different control groups, even for the incentives.
I know. This just speaks to what data nerds we are. I think we had this opportunity and we wanted to know as much as we possibly could. If we're going to do this on a bigger scale, we want to do it in the most effective way with the least amount of money, right? So if it's a lottery that's going to entice people to participate, then fantastic. If it's a guaranteed every time you take a survey, you get $10, then that's what we would want to do. So we want to see how it affects the likelihood that someone's going to complete the survey and if they have a preference. It's really, we're just gluttons for punishment, I think.
You already have, I think, what, about 200 surveys completed? Do you have any sense yet of what the, you know, what's going down in terms of the incentives?
We do. We have a sense from the item where we ask participants what they would prefer to receive, and most would prefer to get the $10 gift card. The thing I want to be clear about, though, is that we have structured this so that anyone who completes all three surveys will get the same amount of money. So they can get a $10 gift card. If they're in that condition, they get $10 at baseline, the 3-month follow-up, and the 6-month follow-up, and then they get a $20 bonus to get up to $50. If someone has not gotten won any of the lotteries over time, regardless, at those 3-time points, they get a $50 bonus for completing. So we have $50 for having completed all 3 surveys is what we felt like was reasonable to ask someone to participate in this study.
So you're just playing with our minds then at this point, because it's all the same in the end.
Everybody's a winner.
Yeah, it's all the same in the end.
And who's funding this? I mean, you have to have some funding, not just mm-hmm. for the gift cards, but also to do the research, to fund the salaries of people who are doing the data analysis. So who is behind this?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a lot of people behind it. It's a really lovely partnership in this way. Some of the money is coming from the health department's tobacco control and prevention program. Some is coming from alcohol drug abuse program funds. Some of it is coming from the University of Vermont. So we're pooling our resources together. We would be spending this money anyway on an evaluation of some of our substance use prevention campaigns. But it, like Andrea said earlier, it would be much smaller samples. So what you're able to get from that data is less, right? Because you can't generalize to a population if it's a smaller qualitative research project. So we felt like pooling our money together, we could have this much bigger bang for the buck.
When you say that it's over a 6-month time period that these 3 surveys will be completed by the people who decide to participate, the young people, but you've already done 200 of the baseline surveys. So is this sort of a rolling thing that anybody who wants to can enter at any time and that starts their 6-month clock? Or how are you doing that?
No, we've actually structured it so we have blocks of time where we will be collecting each survey. So we have the current 8-week period is our recruitment period. And then we will start the follow-up surveys at 12 weeks. So people may be completing a survey in less time, but we're marking it by the calendar, not by someone's individual enrollment.
But then this only works as a nimble tool if you keep doing it. So if you're continually running these surveys over the course of a year and many years, so is that the plan? I mean, this is the first round, but you must already have to have the second round in your head.
Yeah, this is the whole goal from the start of this project was to develop pilot data that then we could get additional funding, external funding to continue the study, potentially to expand the study to a larger sample. So we already have deadlines for grant proposals that are due, one in the summer, one in the fall. And we'll be putting these data forward as pilot data to show that it's feasible for us to do this study.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're learning about the PACE Vermont study that aims to track in pretty much real time the substance use by young people and how they think and feel about various drugs. We're talking with the creators of this online survey, Andrea Vellante, a professor of psychiatry and psychology at UVM, and Christy Valancourt, the chronic disease information director at the Vermont Department of Health. We got a note from CJ who says, we know tobacco and nicotine are bad. At the same time, Juul claims that it's a smoking cessation tool. Enough already with the data collection. Why is it in 2019 that the smoking age isn't already 21 and vaping equipment and supplies aren't already by prescription only? So, Christy, maybe you want to talk policy here, and you can answer CJ directly, but also, you know, how then something like this tool isn't just yet another data point that is, you know, chewed over with no decisions being made.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, Andrea, I think you might be best to speak to this one. This is her bread and butter.
So, Juul is marketed by the company as a smoking cessation tool.
But this is J-U-U-L for people who are unfamiliar.
Yes. What we have seen is that it has dominated the market. And so in a 1-year period, essentially went from having about a 25% market share. The last data that I've seen is that it's about a 75% market share. We know that it's been used, that it's widespread among youth because it's It's got a lot of flavors. It's sort of a techie looking device, and also has really efficient nicotine delivery. So part of the concern that we have for young people is that we don't want that to be an on-ramp to a long-term tobacco use. So that is a concern that we have, and that's where our efforts will have a sense of the prevalence of the behavior, how we might identify and target communication campaigns to prevent youth use. But the other piece of the puzzle is that for adult smokers, it could be a way, an off-ramp from cigarettes and from the death and disability that's associated with smoking. We're in a difficult time right now where we haven't fully decoupled our understanding of nicotine from our understanding of the effects of smoking. Smoking, the burden of death and disease in our country is largely attributed to cigarette smoking. It is the most toxic form of tobacco use. So the more that we can do to get people off of cigarettes and to prevent young people from using tobacco in any form or nicotine in any form, the better.
And one of the confusing things, at least from what I've been reading about Juul in particular, is that some studies are showing that young people don't know that there is nicotine in it. Right. And so there may be a question of understanding what they're using versus adults who may also not know, but some adults who may be fully aware of what and why and how they're using this product versus young people who think, hey, this is an e-cigarette, but it's not nicotine. It's something different because it's cherry flavored.
Right. And that's so to be very clear, any commercially available Juul pod that is sold in a store by the company contains nicotine. So there are not Juul pods out that do not have nicotine in them. All of them have nicotine. That said, there are ways to hack the product. And that's a question that I received from a high school nurse saying, we've heard that these products can't be used for other things. And that's not the case either. That's one of the concerns that we have with e-cigarettes in general is that the products can be used for other substances. So there, vaping marijuana is popular, vaping nicotine. The fact that we have a single device that could accommodate both things is something we need to keep a careful eye on.
So how do you then ask about that in this PACE study?
So we ask separately in line with items that have been used in another large study called Monitoring the Future about young people's experience with vaping nicotine, with vaping marijuana, and with vaping just flavoring. And then we can look at that compared with the products that they reported using. If they reported using Juul, but they said they were not using flavoring, we know that there's a discrepancy there and we need to do some educational messaging.
Okay, so Christy Valancourt, say you know this information, then what? CJ is saying, great, collect more data, but do something. So how does this then lead to action?
Yeah. So we can take this data and we can share it with all the policymakers, decision makers. We can show them concrete evidence. You know, it's not just about e-cigarettes on PACE Vermont, as we know. But what are the implications of even talking about Tobacco 21 without it having been passed yet? Because as soon as we start talking about it, we're starting to normalize it one way or the other. What does it look like with legalized marijuana? And if we had retail stores, one of the questions that we asked is, if you used marijuana, how did you use it? Did you smoke it? Did you eat it in candy or brownie? So we have ideas and we know what other states are doing. And, you know, we can infer, oh, when this happens, then this is the outcome. But this is one of the first time we have a tool that really in real time data can say, this is what young people in Vermont think about this policy. This is how they think it will affect them or not affect them. Oh, yeah, that health promotion campaign that we just put on TV, it's getting in front of the right people and it's actually having the intended outcome. We have so much data, but we can't always say, oh, this outcome is directly tied to this work that we're doing. So that's very exciting.
You know, I wonder if eventually the bottleneck is going to be just as frustrating, though, because so if you've got this tool that is fast, that can sort of see things changing, and then you get to the policy level, and everybody knows that frequently at the policy level, it can take a couple of years to change something. And if the PACE study is showing things changing so quickly, which it may or may not do. I mean, I'm not assuming that things are going to necessarily change with e-cigarettes or something like that. But let's say you're seeing things shift and change. Could that actually make policymakers feel more paralyzed? Because any decision they make, if it takes a year, they might feel like, oh my gosh, I'm already going to be out of date. Or now the discussion has changed and we have to think about this impact versus that impact. And so actually they could sort of work against one another in a weird way.
I think this speaks to how PACE can complement other existing data sources, right? So if we were just looking at PACE, perhaps it would be, they may feel like that. I can't speak to that, what they would feel. We don't have enough data yet to see what we're looking at. But that's where something like the Youth Risk Behavior Survey could complement what we're finding in PACE in between. And also, we're going to keep core questions in each wave of the PACE Vermont study. So there's only, you know, there's a select specialty questions that we're adding to it. So there are going to be themes that continue through.
We were talking about Juul, and I think this is something that a lot of people are confused about. And Fred in Richmond is wondering, how is Juul regulated? Is it FDA approved? You know, how and why has Juul become so popular? So do you have any insight for Fred and others who are thinking, okay, wait a minute, you're talking about this thing that I either don't understand or don't even know?
Yeah, so Juul really came onto the market a couple of years ago. It does fall under the authority of FDA to be regulated. FDA has not currently established many guidelines about regulation. So at this point, there are no safety or quality control standards on these products. So that's something we're working on, and I do a lot of research in this area to try to inform FDA and support efforts in this area. But I think, you know, one thing to understand is that these products are coming through the branch of FDA that deals with tobacco products, which are known to be harmful. They're not coming through the branch of FDA that deals with drug approvals. And that's the place that nicotine replacement medications have come through. There is no e-cigarette that has gone through that FDA approval process to be considered a smoking cessation medication in the United States. There's one product that has gone through that approval process in the UK, and then the company was not able to market it, so it didn't have sufficient production. It didn't end up coming to market in that way. So currently, the state of affairs is that e-cigarettes on the market are consumer products. They have not come through any sort of pathway that would license them as a medicine.
With this survey, Christy Valancourt, I'm curious from your perspective at the Department of Health, what you're most excited about. I mean, this started from a germ of a conversation that you had at an airport, and you know that that's not going to actually come to fruition if the people who are behind it are not super passionate and pushing this forward. So what is it that you're super excited about?
Oh, Lord, I'm super excited about a lot, so I'll try to edit myself here. But really, what we want to know is it really comes down to understanding what are young Vermonters, what are they thinking, what are they feeling, what are they doing when it comes to substance use? Like, how do they identify themselves? Not how do we as adults at the health department say that they should be identified, right? In the past, it was, you're a young person, you live here, maybe your family makes this, maybe you go to this school, therefore you are this. We know better than that, right? And we all remember being teenagers, and your identity can be very fluid. So in terms of, you know, what I work on in a marketing standpoint, communication, health promotion, I want to get to the identity, to what they're thinking, so that we can custom tailor our work, our messages, our programs, so that we are reflective of what they need and we can best serve them.
Do you have any young people that you use as consultants? I mean, it seems like if that's the key and it's all adults being like, well, I don't know, teenagers, foreign species, maybe you need some, like, you know, 14-year-olds on staff.
Not a bad idea. We definitely have many parents of teenagers that say, oh, this is what my kid is doing, or I even just saw a Juul pod in my kid's backpack, you know, so none of us are immune from this. We're all Vermonters, we're families, we're all connected.
What about for you, Andrea Valenti? What are you most excited about?
You know, I am in the Department of Psychiatry, but I'm a public health researcher. And my work has been very focused on trying to design studies that inform policy and that inform programs. The thing I'm most excited about is our partnership with the Department of Health, that this has been truly from the get-go a collaboration, and that we are designing the study in a way to feed data back to be as useful and relevant and timely as possible to make decisions with respect to substance use prevention in our state.
Again, we come back to this word nimble and this idea that having this real-time data can be really useful and really valuable. Is there a risk, or do you have any concern that having this information as it changes could have not a detrimental impact, but could also have some unintended consequences? And I think about something like a smoking cessation campaign that might have a really long tail. It takes a long time in many cases to change behavior and to change thinking. And so if you're seeing a survey that the people who are paying for an ad campaign are saying it hasn't had any effect, look, it hasn't changed since the last time you did this survey, that, you know, the plug could be pulled on something too fast without necessarily understanding this takes a couple of years and then you'll see a population shift over time. But that if we're looking at data that's too granular, you know, too close, it's going to be harder to understand when to associate something with a shift or a trend.
So one of the ways that we're dealing with this is by asking some intermediate outcomes. So we may not see an immediate impact on behavior of a communication campaign, but what we might see in a short-term period are impacts on beliefs, on knowledge, on awareness of the campaign. So those are the types of outcomes that we can see and we can track over time, and then in subsequent waves be able to see if those things, which we expect to have impacts on behavior, if that actually plays out. You know, this is a question for all evaluations like this. Is this the timeline? Is that an appropriate timeline? Have we sampled the right people? All of these are continuing to be questions. And this does not, again, take the place of other evaluation efforts, but it can complement what's going on in the field.
So if parents and young adults are interested in participating, you're still in this open window where people can join, right? So how do they do that?
PaceVermont.org, PaceVT.org. You'll come to our webpage, which will have brief information on the study. You can learn more about the study there. If you click on a link, you're forwarded to receive more information and to provide information for yourself and for your children.
We got a note from Sharon in Bridport who says, it would be great to find a way to involve youth in bringing meaning to the PACE data after it's collected, as is done with the Youth Risk Behavior Survey through Getting to Why, Youth Bring Meaning to Their Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Getting the data from youth is important, as is getting their help in making sense of the data once it is collected. So who is this data going to be available to, and how can regular people, not just researchers, use it and make value out of it?
I have to say, I so love that comment.
Christy, your eyes lit up.
I got so excited. I used to work in a Substance Use Coalition for Teens, and we did the Getting to the Why, and I just love that that's out there. It would be fantastic to see young people be able to use this data. So to answer your question, we're gonna share this data far and wide in as many ways as we can, producing data products, submitting to scientific manuscripts, we're going to take it on the road show, some presentations to all stakeholders. I think the sky is the limit, really.
So it's going to be open source? I mean, can parents and teenagers and other people and teachers look at it and use it?
We haven't planned to have that be open source. That's something we have to figure out with our institutional review board in terms of maintaining privacy, et cetera. But what we plan to do is publish what we call data snacks on our social media pages and seek comment and interpretation from our followers.
All right. Well, a lot still to be determined, and you know, it's changing over time. So I appreciate both of you being here to tell us a little bit more about the PACE Vermont study. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrea Vellante is a professor of psychiatry and psychology at UVM. Christy Valancourt is the Chronic Disease Information Director at Vermont's Department of Health. They are coordinating the PACE study, which again looks at substance use among young people and how it shifts over time. And we have a link at vpr.org. Just click on today's Vermont edition.